The most difficult part of motherhood for me has been the loss of identity. I have this identity of mom now, but I've lost my sense of self.
Hello, Danielle.
Hi, Jeff.
How's it going?
It's going. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm excited for you to be on this podcast. Can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. My name is Danielle LaSousa, and I'm a philosophical coach, which is a title that I just sort of made up for myself. Mm-hmm. I have a PhD in philosophy, and I use that training to help people think better and live better. And I specialize in helping new and expectant moms grapple with what it means to make a human being. Yeah. Not a small thing.
No, not a small thing. And that's actually what we're going to be focusing on today.
Yeah.
Right? So before we get into it, let's play the voicemail that was sent in.
Hi, I'm Cassie. I find that the most difficult part of motherhood for me, or at least one of the most difficult parts, has been the loss of identity that I've experienced since they came into the world. I have this identity of mom now, but I've lost my sense of self. And I don't have any idea how to get it back yet. And they were born 8 years ago. And I'm still searching for who I am now. It's shaken the foundation of me. And I wish I knew how to go about finding this person I am now.
Okay, so this is a topic that you talk about a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What were your first emotional feelings when you heard this call?
Yeah, I mean, just a lot of empathy and compassion for this person because, man, I feel like so many people go through it. We have kids and we think it's going to go one way and then it turns out not. Or we feel like, I don't know, for me, my experience was like, oh, I'll have kids. I'll be able to handle it. And, you know that it's going to complicate your life and you feel like it's going to, everyone says it changes you in ways you can never expect or anticipate. And you're like, okay, well, I don't quite know what that means, but.
But what did you think it meant when they said that?
You know, I don't know. I think I felt like, oh, you'll know love like you've never known love before, or mm-hmm. you will have to become a grown-up in ways that you didn't expect or something. But I didn't expect it to totally upend my sense of who I am.
Yeah, because when people say that, I feel like that's not a selling point for me.
Yeah, right.
I think that they are probably talking about the love part. You never love somebody or something as much as, but there's also it sounds like you might become a totally different person. And I like the person that I've become, and I've worked hard at becoming the person that I am. And so to introduce something that could potentially, most likely, incredibly change who I am, that feels like now I don't have as much control over who I am, and I'm not into it. Were you battling or grappling with I might lose myself and I need to think about what's going to happen here?
I mean, when I was in it, definitely. Beforehand, I didn't think that mm-hmm. would happen. I think some part of me thought that having a kid would be like having a pet or having mm-hmm. A new accessory or mm-hmm. something, mm-hmm. It's complicates your life, but you figure out how to manage it. I didn't think it would totally force me to reconstruct my sense of self.
Do you think that, forcing, to reconstruct your sense of self, do you think that happens to the majority of women or every person?
It's hard for me to know because I may have a skewed sample mm-hmm. Of the people I talk to, but I think for a lot of us, it does. I think that it happens perhaps in the way that it happened for me. I find that a lot of times it's people who are really self-possessed or feel very competent and capable, maybe like, you know, high achieving type A people like myself, who are just trying to like have a very strong sense of control over their lives. And then, as you said, having a kid is like, it is a lifelong lesson in relinquishing control. Like, you do not know what's going to happen with your pregnancy, your labor, your birth, that child. They could have any number of things that, you know, you have no control over, that now is a huge part of your life and a huge part of how you have to spend your day. And I think that loss of control was the thing that just was so scary for me, especially if, you know, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist and wanting things to, you know, like be good and be right and do well. So I think for some people, you know, I mean, I have people in my life who are just like, well, it was fine. I had kids and, you know, my life just kind of went on. I mean, yeah, my sister, I was talking to her. I was like, yeah, I'm teaching this medium motherhood course, you know, about how like motherhood totally turns your world upside down. You think about death all the time. And she just looked at me. She was like, I didn't do any of that. Huh. That wasn't me.
Why is it just because like she has a different personality structure? Is it because she's not as in touch with who she really is? Is she in denial about something? Do we know?
I have no idea. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, it could be, you know, it could be any of those things. It could be just that like I am just a, I don't know, maybe I'm just a morose or existentially minded person.
Maybe. But I feel like your sister's reaction is more rare, I would say, just based on my personal experience talking to folks.
Yeah. I think so.
And maybe it's something that like we would all maybe like hope for or strive for, like, oh, this baby, this new child is more of like a compliment, an addition to my life. And I still get to kind of like be on this road of knowing who I am and what my goals are. And I'm not suffering from like too much existential dread, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we maybe like want it to be. But oftentimes it just goes fucking sideways.
It sure does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, like, I think a lot of times people will say that, you know, there's this pressure on women and on mothers to say that it's that version of things. Like, oh yeah, it's great. I love it. Motherhood suits me and I just feel so much love and my life is just fine and the same. And we have this kind of feeling like it's supposed to be like that. And if it's not, there's something wrong with us. Mm-hmm. And so I think some people say that it's great even when it isn't.
Yeah. like you're saying, that one of the worst fears that I have, if I had a child, is I'd be worried that I'd regret making that decision to have a kid, but now I have to lie to myself
and tell myself
and everybody else that I don't actually regret it. This is the most amazing, important, loving, like thing that has ever happened to me, when really maybe it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I can make a different decision. This is my life for now, you know? So like,
yeah.
What if that's what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, if you're talking to somebody that's struggling with that, like, how do you typically respond to them?
Yeah, I think the first thing is just to normalize and destigmatize the feeling of regret. You know, maternal regret in particular is just like, and it's so funny, whenever people talk about it, they always preface it with this, well, I love my kids and I wouldn't, you know, trade them for the world. I'm so glad that they exist, blah, blah, blah. But I regret becoming a mom. And I think it's, you know, sort of absurd and like speaks to a lack of like emotional nuance that we have in the culture around parenthood and motherhood in particular, that we can't accept. People feel the need to give that caveat that like, of course you love your kids, but you can also wish that you had made a different choice. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot, I know a lot of women who say like, I didn't know it was going to be like this. And if I had known it was going to be like this, I wouldn't have done it. Mm. And it's a really painful thing to live with because, as you said, you can't ever go back. This is just your life now. And I think there's some amount of that for every new parent. I mean, you lose so much freedom and so much more of your life. At least for me, I lost so much more than I anticipated losing. And there is a ton of grief in that. Mm. And, you know, one of the stages of grief is like, can it not be like this? Can we just go back? Like, you know, the denial and the bargaining or whatever those five stages are, and wishing that like, I want it back to the way it was. I think everyone, if they're honest with themselves, has some amount of that. And I think that we need to be able to say that and talk about it and see that it is part of the process of becoming a parent is grieving the loss of your old life. And you're allowed to be sad about that. You're allowed to be sad about what you've lost. And if you can't speak to that and you can't allow yourself to feel it, it's just going to be that much harder.
Mm-hmm. What I'm worried, though, about that is that the kid might hear it and feel like they're the problem. They're the ones that are responsible for their mom or their dad or their caregivers, you know, depression or sadness or existential anxiety, right? And yeah, it is their fault. I think we can squarely blame this on the children. Podcast over, right?
Yeah, that's clearly the lesson to take away from this conversation.
Yeah. I mean, while you're talking, I'm thinking about my own mom. And I've talked a little bit, you know, about my complicated relationship with her and how I'm not talking to her right now. And how she, like, how does she, since I'm not talking to her, I don't exactly know how she's, like, emotionally, what, like, the story that she's telling to herself or how she feels about our distance or my disappointment and mm-hmm. her being a parent or something. But now she has to, like, somehow square that. She either has to, like, be in denial or be like, well, Jeff's just a fucking asshole, which is not true, right? and like, ugh, that's almost like, that's one of the worst case scenarios is you have a kid. Mm-hmm. You do your absolute best having this child. You've given up and sacrificed so many things, whether you wanted to or not or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you have a turd of a kid, mm-hmm. me, who's just like, you didn't do good enough. And there's just like, it's sort of like, even though you can try your best, mm-hmm. it still might not work out. And you lose your identity in it. And you would like become a totally different person that you weren't expecting. There's so many reasons to not be a parent. And I hope that this is like, we're doing a service for all the people that are thinking about it. And hopefully they'll decide not to.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong. Like there is, I've talked to so many women and parents about the fear of what if I try so hard and my kid doesn't want a relationship with me, right? In the same way that so many of us have complicated relationships with their own parents. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, my personal life and in a lot of the, what I see from my clients, it's just, there's such a motivation to like read all the parenting books and figure it out. And how do I do gentle parenting and this kind of parenting, whatever, mm-hmm. like, so that my kid won't cut me out of their life when they turn 40, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. That's one version of the fear. Another version of the fear is, you know, so my kid won't, you know, get addicted to fentanyl or end up in jail or, you know, whatever, like whatever the thing is. And again, we have no control. Like you can try your best. And I think the thing that has been helpful for me and incredibly humbling, but important is to remind myself that my child is a totally separate person from me, you know?
Yeah, a totally separate person from you that you also influence, that you have like a certain amount of responsibility for, right? I don't know how to like...
Well, I think that sometimes we think, at least I thought and still find myself thinking like, oh, my child and her mental well-being and her personality and her relationship with me is an accumulation of my parenting successes or failures. Like that's what it is. It's like whether I do a good job or a bad job determines who she will become, how healthy, quote unquote, she will feel, and whether or not she'll want a relationship with me. But at the same time, like she is her own being and mm-hmm. she has her own things to deal with, and who she becomes is a big part of it is not in my control. And so I think that helps me to get out of this feeling like I need to do everything right, because a lot of it's not up to me. Mm-hmm. And it also helps me have a stronger sense of empathy for this person. And I'm able to kind of sit with her pain, her emotions, her needs, whatever, as not being a reflection of my shortcomings.
You're talking about your daughter.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about my mom. Like, nobody gets to have empathy for her. I think I've been pretty clear about that. Well, it sounds like, you know, one of the things that you're saying is that you're going to do your best to be the best mom, parent that you can be. And it also might be up to your daughter on, like, how she thinks you were as a parent. So your definition of being a good parent could be very different than her definition of being a good parent. And there's nothing you can do about
that. There's nothing you can do about it. And I'm actually almost certain that those will be different because they're two different people. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the thing. You become a parent and suddenly you are a critical character in someone else's story. Mm-hmm. It is not your story anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a child, like, your mom is a character in your story, a very important character, but she doesn't get to control the story you tell.
But isn't it like, and now that character, your daughter, gets to define how you are in their story as a good, bad, something in between. And you don't really, like, you get some influence there, but she really gets to make up her mind about that. And you just have to fucking deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really humbling. It's really, and I actually think there's something... I think that might be part of the, like, loss of identity. It's like this dissolution of the ego or a loss of control over how another person sees you in a way that is, I mean, it shook me. It really just shook me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's still just starting because she's young, right?
Yeah. She's only 8. And so she still mostly likes me, I think.
Let's keep it that way. I'm keeping the question in mind that the caller called in with. And what struck me is that, like, oh God, you sound so lost and far away from who you were. There's like, I imagine there's like, you know, obviously we're kind of talking about it, but there's like a grieving process there of who you used to be. And that grieving process maybe never ends. Like, you always grieve whatever you want, your youth or your life before being a parent, right? That's just sort of like nonstop grief. There's nothing we can do about it, I feel like. Or is there? What do you think?
I mean, I think it's like an endless grieving in the same way that the loss of a loved one is an endless grieving process, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there is... you're always going to miss that self before kids. You're always going to miss that person who has passed, but it changes. The grief changes. And I think, you know, when my daughter was younger, I would have these moments where I would just like have this kind of longing for this. I was like, I just want like 5 minutes, that feeling of not being a parent. Right. The feeling of like, I am not responsible for anybody except myself. Mm-hmm. And that kind of feeling of being alone in the world. And I was like, you know, I would go through these cycles where I was like, I just want like 2 days of not being a parent. And I feel that way very seldom now. I think it's just sort of integrated. And maybe it's because I don't even remember what that felt like anymore.
Because now you're dead inside.
Because now
that's what happened. Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like when you know, I tell people that like it's sort of like living in a foreign country, right? Like you're there and it all feels new and you feel really homesick and you feel like you don't know the customs and you don't know the language and you're feeling kind of disjointed all the time. And then eventually you integrate and you start... Mm-hmm. thinking in that other language and start dreaming in it. And then it feels easier.
And I imagine maybe you also start loving that new part of you or side of you or identity that starts to develop, right?
Yeah. And I have to say, I think for me, I don't know that I would have ever come to a place of this level of self acceptance and self-compassion and self-love if I had not become a parent, because the impetus to do so was so strong and the motivation to figure it out so that my kid doesn't turn 40 and not want to talk to me was so strong. And also because it was just so painful, like the thought of I'm going to screw it up and then I'm going to lose this being or this child that I love so much and want, you know, just want to feel connected to. It was just so painful that I had to figure out a way to comfort myself, to be with myself, to know myself and understand myself so that I could survive it. And I'm really, really grateful for that.
Yeah. It sounds like it's been an incredibly powerful experience, obviously, yeah, in so many ways. And interesting that, you know, getting in touch with that self-love and self-compassion, I didn't have to have a fucking kid. Like, I did that right without doing that.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. So I think you needed to do that for sure, but me, not so much. But it's that kind of bullshit that makes me like think, like, what are you trying to fucking say? Like, you're more evolved than me? Like, that is what you're trying to say,
that's
isn't it?
Totally, that's absolutely what I'm trying to say. People with kids are better people.
Yeah.
And the rest of you should just get on that, because otherwise you're just going to lose something really important. Uh-huh.
No, I know that obviously that's not what you're trying, but that's like, that's the what I hear. That's my own bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people do actually try to say that. Right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, right. Lots of people. Mm-hmm.
I think people say that because it's like, because they need some justification for how hard and painful mm-hmm. it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, but this is the only way. This is the only way to experience this level of, you know, the self-love or the human experience. And sure. I think that, you know, if I hadn't had kids, I would have had a totally different set of experiences that would have led me possibly to that path. And I think that the journey for all of us is that journey to self-love and self-compassion, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just a matter of what path we take to get there. But I think it's always the same destination for all of us.
I'd like to believe that.
Yeah.
I think that's true. And that there's like, you know, so many other paths besides having a child, besides like ripping this child out of the void and forcing them to be in the physical world because I want them to be. And just the birth, the late is so traumatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not fair.
No.
So I think I'm more selfless and you're more selfish.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the thing too. When people come to me and they're just like, well, I don't know if I should have a kid or not, or I don't know if I should have a second kid or not, because it just seems so selfish to only have one, or it just seems so selfish not to have a sibling, or it just seems so selfish to bring another child into this world. Or, you know, it's like, it will be selfish no matter what. Like you can always tell a story of how selfish you're being because of whatever choices you're making. And I think all of us have kids or don't, because we want to. Honestly, I really think that's it. It's like we just either want to or we don't want to. And then we justify our choices with a whole story that we tell ourselves about, oh, it's bad for climate change, or it's a self, you know, like the world's so full of suffering, or like, how could you not want to say yes to life, or, you know, whatever story you want to tell yourself. Ultimately, it comes down to what is it that you want, and you do what you want. And maybe that is okay. Whatever way it is, because, you know, we are also like, we are complicated beings. We have a genetic and evolutionarily drive in some way or another. And it's okay for us to make the choices we want to make.
Right. I agree with everything you just said. There's also like the caveat of like, some people are not able to make that choice. It's kind of like a privilege, right? To make it or not. So there's those things, but yes, like, I think we get what you're saying there. What do you do with this caller though? Who's, it seems like they want to get back. I was going to say they want to get back to who they were, but that's me projecting some stuff onto them. I always think like, parents are grieving who they were before they were a parent, and they so badly want to get back, and there's nothing that they can do about it. I don't know if that's true for some, that's true for whatever. But when you've like kind of maybe lost yourself and you haven't really been like as connected as you used to be maybe for the past 8 years, and that you're like playing the role of mom, which can be, you know, satisfying or not or whatever. There's like all the different, where do you even start?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's a few places. One is to just call what you're experiencing grief. Like, I think so many of us feel like we don't even allow ourselves to, or even think that what to call what we are experiencing grief, because it's the appropriate response to so much loss, I think. And mm-hmm. so part of it is not, you know, I study Buddhism and a lot, and the Buddhists have this saying of the second arrow, where it's like, if you're feeling sad or angry or anxious or whatever, and then you kind of pile on, it's like, they say it's like feeling like being struck with an arrow, and then you tell yourself you shouldn't be feeling this way, or it's like wrong, or you're bad, or you feel ashamed. It's like throwing a second arrow at yourself, you know? And the first arrow hurts enough. Like, just let the first arrow hurt, and like, you don't need to throw a second one on top of it. So I think part of it is just allowing your feelings to be what they are.
Which is maybe some people don't even ever get to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that second arrow is creating so much pain and shame, and like, parental shame, maybe the hardest shame there is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you do admit to yourself that you're grieving, or that you're sad, or you miss your old life or whatever, then there's a lot of shame of like, well, then you're not a good parent. Mm-hmm. You need to like love your kid and now your life 100% unconditionally. Mm-hmm. So you're so focused on the second arrow of shame, parental shame, that is like hijacking your whole system, that you can't get into mm-hmm. the grief. So I agree. I think that like, it's important to get in touch with that grief, but maybe most people never do.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. No, it's totally possible. And, you know, it's this, I think one thing that can help with that is I often ask people to identify, like, what is it that you actually need or want here? Right. The thing that you are at the most basic level, if we look at basic human needs, what is it that you're needing? And for a lot of people, I mean, it always kind of comes down to the same few things, right? I need love. I need a sense of belonging. I need to feel safe. I need to feel good, right? I need to feel acceptable. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that can be helpful is to say those are all totally reasonable things to need and want. They're absolutely human. No one would fault you for wanting or needing those things. And we all do. It's part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. And so validating to ourselves that like, I'm feeling sad because I need autonomy. I need freedom. Well, of course you do. Everybody does. Mm. And even just validating to yourself that it's okay to need what you need can be helpful in, I think, minimizing that shame response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want autonomy. I want independence. And that doesn't mean I'm a bad mom.
That's right.
Right. And, you know, you can be a good mom and want to be away from your kid sometimes. Mm-hmm. Both of those things can exist at the same time, even though there's like maybe societal messages or cultural messages that are saying that you shouldn't. But there's also maybe like biological stuff going on that like if you distance yourself physically, emotionally, mentally from your kid, then your kid might be in danger. Like you're programmed to not go through this process, it seems like.
Yeah, well, and I think one thing that's also helpful to keep in mind is that, you know, the nuclear family, as separated from other families, is a fairly new invention of mm-hmm. human beings, right? Mm-hmm. For many, many, many years, we lived intergenerationally. We, you know, and in those times, the average ratio of caretaking adults to children in like a hunter-gatherer society, which human beings evolved in and like lived that way for 200,000 years, is 4 caretaking adults to every 1 child. Hmm. 4. Mm-hmm. Not 1. Mm-hmm. Not 1 adult to 2 or 3 kids. 4 adults for every 1 child. So that is what our like genetic nervous systems are built for. Mm-hmm. And to be with your children that like alone, isolated from other people that much of the time, of course it's going to be overwhelming. Of course it's going to feel like it robs you of your autonomy and your sense of self and your like ability to emotionally regulate and all of these things, because this is crazy. Like the way that our society expects children to be raised is not how we have done it for thousands of years, and actually is really, I think, bad for all of us. I think mm-hmm. it's really bad for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now it's gotten a little better because now it might be like 1 adult, 1 child, plus an iPad, Fortnite, a phone.
Yeah.
So that makes it a lot easier, actually. I know what you're complaining about.
Those things have become babysitters for a lot of people.
Right.
You know? Exactly. And like, and no wonder.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. That, I like that. That makes me, that like feels like you, it's like okay for you to have your overwhelmed experience, right? Like this isn't yeah. how it should be. This isn't how it was set up.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, no wonder you feel this way. This is not, it, this is not a you problem. This is a systemic problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say that a lot to clients
mm-hmm.
and you know, everyone says like it, you know, you need a village and where's my village? And it's, you know, it's really painful because we don't have the village in the way that we used to. Mm-hmm. And I think part of what we are all mourning collectively is the absence of that village. I mm-hmm. think that is part of our grief, mm-hmm. our grieving experience. And I think we do not acknowledge that because we think, well, this is just the way it is. This is the way it is. And there must be something wrong with me because I am not fitting in to the way that it is. And there's not anything wrong with you. This is not a you problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, that like all of these things are very validating. Hopefully we'll land in like a really validating way for this caller or anyone else who's feeling these feelings, that it's okay to have these feelings. It's important to get in touch with your grief. It makes sense that you're struggling. Mm-hmm. When you eventually do really get in touch with that grief and start moving through it, which could take an extremely long time,
mm-hmm.
what do you think like the next step might be?
Yeah, I think that part of the process of getting in touch with the grief is being able to nurture yourself in it. And for me, this was honestly how I felt like I connected to my own sense of being a mother. Like people ask me like, when did you start feeling like a mom? Mm. And it really, you know, for a while I was like, I don't know, my kid turned two. Like, I don't know, the word mom started feeling like, okay, I guess that belongs to me. But I didn't really feel like a mother until I learned to mother myself. When feeling those experiences of grief or longing or pain, loss, just kind of, you know, one thing I have clients do is imagine being held, right? Like really thinking, visualizing a caretaker, someone that when you are really just sitting with the hard feelings can come in, take you in their lap and just say, I'm here with you. I mm-hmm. have you, mm-hmm. you know, like, I know it hurts and you're not alone. And I think that the more we can do that and feel it somatically and really try and let ourselves relax into it, and the more we can kind of like take ourselves into our own laps, the more we can feel connected to that kind of parental wisdom that we all are hoping to embody as parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, you know, people say like all parenting is reparenting yourself. And mm-hmm. I think that that is what, for me, has been just really incredibly healing about the experience.
Hmm. Did it make you want to become even closer with your mom?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think what it has done, it has given me the space to imagine a relationship with my mom that is beyond a relationship of anger and resentment and pointing out the ways in which she's failed. You know,
because that doesn't sound like fun.
I know. There's just something so satisfying uh-huh. about rubbing your mother's nose and all of her exactly. failures. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And I did that for a long time. I really, you know, I think that I was really angry for a long time. And I think what it allowed me to do, because I was looking to her for that, right? Like, mm-hmm. I just want you to see me. I just want you to sit with my pain mm-hmm. and know that like it exists. And not to run away from it and not to pretend like it's not there and not to take it personally as mm-hmm. like an attack on you, but just to see me as a separate person who has her own experience, who is a human being, who experiences pain, and to nurture me in that. And I think once I learned to do it for myself, I stopped looking to her to do it for me. And mm-hmm. that allowed me to see her in a different way. I could see her more as a person. And there wasn't always this sense of longing and need, of like unfulfilled need, mm-hmm. every time we talk.
I don't know. It's interesting that you're saying that you felt like you were really able to step into the role or label of mom once you started to like mom yourself, mm-hmm. Which like allowed you to like, you know, release some tension with your own mom. And then maybe even like show up more with your own daughter, but it all started like inside of you, instead of like, I'm a mom to this daughter. Like, now I'm thinking about my own mother to me. Like, that's all outside of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, again, like not wanting to kind of like pass this on, quote unquote. And I have so much to say about this idea of passing things on. I can do that in a minute, but, okay. But because it was just this feeling of like, I don't want to, yeah, I think it was just the fear. I don't want my kid to think about me with all of that anger and resentment the way that I have been thinking about my mom. I just don't want that to happen again. And I don't know if it will. It probably will to some extent, right? Because sure. Like, yeah. We've all fucked up.
Yes.
But like, I was so afraid of that happening again. I was like, I got to do whatever it takes to take care of this. I got to figure this out. I don't know what it takes, but, and also I cannot, it was just so painful to, I could not sit with the pain of feeling like I was fucking things up every moment I interacted with my kid. Mm-hmm. It was just so painful. And so, you know, luckily I found a really great therapist and she kind of like taught me how to do this. And suddenly it was like the only thing that helped was being able to kind of sit and hold myself or imagine myself being held and saying like, it's okay. I'm here with you. And once I started doing that enough, I felt capable of doing it myself with my kid. Mm-hmm. And even capable, I mean, I think part of the like stickiness with my mom is like, you know, that's not my role for her in our relationship, but I can imagine her needing that, you know, mm-hmm. and that being what all of us need, mm-hmm. and that being okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you were actually able to like be a better mom once you sort of like started to make this transition?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if by be a better mom, you mean like, you know, not center my own experience over that of my kid. I think that it allows me to not implicitly look at my relationship with my child as needing to be a certain way for me to be okay. And I think that is the thing that kids really resent, is that their parents need something from them. They need them to, you know, love them in a certain way or become a doctor or, right. you know, like whatever the thing is.
Get the good grades, hit the home run. Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants that.
Mm-mm.
You know?
Yeah. No, obviously it puts a lot of pressure on the kid. Now the kid is like, oh, my identity is trying to make my parent happy or loved or feel good enough parenting. Right. And then the parent is also, yeah, kind of like abandoning themselves maybe and putting everything on the kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's a work in progress.
Sure. You said that you had like some feelings about like passing things down. What are your feelings there?
Yeah. I'm working right now on an essay that I'm trying to write about. I feel very frustrated with this kind of, you know, like dictate from the parenting world and from the therapy world, honestly, of like, okay, it's our responsibility to stop the cycle of intergenerational trauma. Like it's our jobs. We've got to do the work so that we don't pass these things on to our kids. And right. Like great. Yes. Sure. In a way, like it would be better if we didn't have to recreate the trauma of our childhoods or parents' childhood or past generations. All well and good. But the thing that frustrates me so much about it is that I see so many of my clients and so many mothers and women who are just like, so scared about passing on stuff from their childhood and feel like it is their responsibility to stop it. And all we are doing is giving mothers one more reason to fucking feel bad about themselves and one more thing to fail at. Because who can stop the cycle of generations of trauma and suffering? Like, in one person, you can't. It is impossible. It is an impossible task. And the fact that we are telling parents that it is their job to do it, and they have to perfectly respond. And, oh, and by the way, it happens before your kids turn three. So if it's, you know, if it's already past that, you've already fucked up. So better get on trying to repair that. You're never going to be able to. So good luck with that. It just, the whole thing makes me so mad, because if you want people to stop experiencing trauma, stop traumatizing them. Don't make it their job to heal all of their internal shit and not pass it on to their kids. End of soapbox.
Sounds like you're passing on a lot of fucking trauma to your kid. You're trying to justify it. You've done a horrible job. And now you have to, like, get on the soapbox to make yourself feel better.
Yes.
And yeah.
I'm fine with that.
It's working for you, not for the kid. It's interesting. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Yes. Like, I get what you're saying there. There's a, you know, we're both adult children. And so you can identify with, like, maybe like being mad at your mom or your grandma or your great grandma or great grandparents or dads or whatever, that, like, you know, we're not aware and thoughtful about the trauma that they were experiencing and then passing down to probably asking a lot to even be aware of it in the first place.
Right. Yeah.
It almost seems like we're just now, maybe like after the pandemic, starting to think about this or something. So it is asking a lot, and I get how it's putting, like, even more pressure on moms and dads and parents. And probably isn't helpful by creating just a ton of fear. And even, like, gearing up, you know, adult children like me is like, ooh, another thing to be mad at my mom about. Like, this is so nice to blame them. And I think, yeah, it's a very reasonable thing for you to say that, like, there's not going to be, like, a person who's going to stop all the intergeneration, you know, the thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions or whatever of years. Millions, probably not millions. We've been here. Have we been here for millions?
No, not Homo sapiens.
Right.
Yeah. It's been about 150,000 to 200,000.
Okay, there you go. So yeah, it's asking a lot, I guess. Is there a more reasonable ask, you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think the problem with it is that it depends on this, again, which I think, like most of psychology, the way it is built, does it puts pressure on us as individuals and says the responsibility of us as individuals is to fix this problem. It's not like society's job. Mm-hmm. Like, we shouldn't, like, you know, create structures in which parenting is a lot easier, or we shouldn't create societies in which people don't have to, like, starve if they can't work, or, you know, all of these things. And I think that it's, again, it's not a you problem. This is a structural problem. And the solution is also a structural solution. And yes, we can do all of this work. And I'm very grateful that I was able to, like, talk to the right therapist and do my healing work and feel held by my inner mother and the whole thing. And that's great. And everyone, I wish it all for all of us. But at the same time, it is not the be all and end all of how this changes. It changes when you start giving people paid parental leave and subsidized childcare and, you know, like, a livable wage and all of these other things that is the responsibility of everyone in this culture to take care of. Because if we want to raise people who aren't going to go, like, grow up and shoot up their fucking schools or, like, you know, destroy the government, like, we need to nurture them as children, and we need to nurture the families that they grow up in with the kind of care and community and love and support that all of us need to feel connected and whole and healthy and happy. And that is how we build a society. And if you're going to treat your new mothers and treat young families and with the kind of, like, you know, just bye, go home from the hospital, good luck, and no paid parental leave and no help, what do you think is going to happen? Of course people are going to suffer. Of course people are going to feel traumatized. And then you're going to make it their job to fix it? Makes me so mad.
I see that. Here's the problem, or here's my problem with that, is that you're asking me to like have a more compassionate view of my mother, right? I can just like so easily be mad at my mom, but I should, or maybe could, be like more understanding of, well, she struggled with addiction and there's like no addiction, you know, the addiction services are horrible. And she was, you know, tasked with these like men that kept on letting her down. And so she was never able to like build that village or that community. And she never got paid time off because she was self-employed and she didn't have the luxury, you know. And you're like, everything you're saying, I agree with and I resonate with. And then there's the whatever it is, the angry adolescent inside of me that's like let down by my mommy, mm-hmm. and which is valid, right? And mm-hmm. we're going to validate it. But it's almost like the, you know, all the men that are making the rules in the government are just like me, mad at their moms and don't understand that, like, if we just like, if that this is like more of a systemic problem and that, you know, we need to be more community based and like, what can we do as a society, nation, yada, yada. So you're asking like everyone to like stop just sort of like blaming their parent, maybe. Well, I don't know, like in a way,
yeah,
right? Or at least understand like everything that's going on instead of like focusing solely on the one thing, on your one parent or your two parent or whatever it is. Like have more compassion and build out more services because of it. And then maybe together we can all stop the intergenerational problem instead of like so satisfyingly putting it on mom and dad.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it is a kind of both, it's a symbiotic relationship, right? Like on the one hand, yes, we need people to not be mad at their mommies and like feel, and this is what, you know, like psychology tells us, like we have these wounds in childhood that show up in our adult relationships and then show right. up at our workplaces and show up in the kinds of policies that we believe in and so forth. And so part of it is, yeah, doing the work of like healing that. But again, that we don't want to like come back to the same problem. It's not the individual's responsibility. Like mm-hmm. it is a both and kind of thing. Like it's easier to do that when you have a culture that says it's okay to do that. And mm-hmm. that gives you the space and the resources to be able to do that. And mm-hmm. so it's not, you know, I don't know where it begins. I think it's like this slow turning of a tanker ship, but my hope is that we are turning in that direction.
Mm-hmm. And I think we might be.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, it does even seem in like the mental health field that it's turning that way. Yeah. That, you know, like therapy was created by Freud and all of his buddies were just like rich white men. And it was all like kind of based on like hyper individualization. Mm-hmm. Where like, you know, bootstrappy, pull yourself up, this is all your fault, sort of thing. And now it's like, it feels like it's starting to evolve into like actually, you know, with like this, you know, we're going to therapy now for whatever, anxiety, depression, relationship issues, and you can only get so much better while living in this fucked up system. Mm-hmm. And because it's so fucked up, or I mean, it's always been fucked up, but because like more people are like starting to open, because the white people are starting to like open their eyes to it,
right.
Now all of a sudden there's a little more like room for space because we're letting in like more diversity of thought, which is more community based. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read something literally today. A former client sent me a book that she was reading about decolonizing therapy. Mm. This idea, essentially what we're talking about, how it's this like kind of always it's been based on this kind of white, heterosexual, individualistic worldview. And that in fact, there are lots of other ways of looking at the world that says, you know, and it's interesting as we were talking even about this like intergenerational trauma and how, you know, you mentioned that like we're only now thinking about how these things connect, but like Indigenous people have been thinking about this for fucking exactly. forever.
They've been yelling at us the whole time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. So it's, you know, maybe we're actually going to start learning a thing or two.
Yeah, probably not. We got a few minutes left. Let's go back to this caller. Mm-hmm. You talked about, you know, getting in touch with the grief. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about nurturing yourself, which I really loved.
Thanks.
Is there another step?
I think you rinse and repeat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, I tell my clients, like, this is a 3-step process. Like, one, acknowledge what you're feeling. And notice that you are feeling a thing, right? Like, 2, validate your needs. And 3, nurture yourself. And I think for me, that third one, you know, I talked about, like, kind of taking yourself in your lap. But I think for everyone, there's a different kind of access point. And I think, you know, for me, it was really about feeling connected to something that felt unequivocally true. And the thing that felt unequivocally true for me was that this planet is my home. Hmm. Like, the earth supports me, literally supports my life, and continues to do so. And so, in a way, this earth wants me here. It wants my life to continue to exist, and I am held by it, and that is true no matter what. And so I think, you know, it has really helped me feel more connected to the whole of the planet and all of us and the people in it. It's helped me feel more connected to nature and more, in a way, like, connected to this sense of the divine, which is, like, kind of... I grew up evangelical and then, like, became an atheist in college, and now I'm finding myself in this, like... whatever this is now, feeling like kind of connected to this sense of the whole, in a way that feels really true and right. And so I think part of it is just figuring out what your access point is for that sense of connection, that sense of wisdom, that sense of knowing your own value and worthiness and lovability no matter what. And then just doing that again and again and again, and trying to form that new neural pathway that tells you that your feelings are okay, that they are worth having, that they come from a good place of wanting to be loved and connected, and that you are loved and connected. And just saying that again and again.
Easy. Problem Easy. Solved.
No problem.
Yay. Thank you so much for being here, Danielle. Can you tell people where they can find you?
Yeah. You can come to my website, daniellelasusa.com, and has all the things about me there.
Good. All right. I can't wait to talk to you next time.
Thank you, Jeff. Bye.